It was notoriously described as a show about nothing. In fact, it was an era-defining comedy focused on 30-something singles with vague identities, no roots, and a conscious indifference to morals. Seinfeld made its debut 30 years ago this week, July the 5th, in fact, 1989, and in the 11 seasons that followed, it rewrote the sitcom rulebook, paving the way for future hits like 30 Rock and Parks and Recreation. Siobhan Keane is a huge fan. Delighted to be talking about Seinfeld, I think, tonight. She's been looking back at the 11 seasons of the show. Was it a hard task, Siobhan, to go back through 11 seasons of Seinfeld?
No, I don't think I can get through 1 week without watching at least one episode.
And I guess if you turn on your television, it's on probably right now on some channel, is it?
The syndication contract that Jerry Seinfeld and Larry David signed back in the 90s was kind of trailblazing, and it's made billions, and I can't believe I'm actually saying it, but it's true, billions to date with syndication and reruns.
Now, the part of the hint isn't what you just said. Jerry Seinfeld, who's in Seinfeld, just explain the basic setup here.
Well, the basic setup for anybody that has somehow avoided Seinfeld over the years is that this essentially is kind of a meta comedy. It's seen as, along with Monty Python's Flying Circus, the kind of postmodern classic sitcom where Jerry Seinfeld, a struggling up-and-coming comic who's, he's kind of established but not really got, he's always trying to get kind of a better kind of contract or better gigs. It follows him in his apartment on the Upper West Side of Manhattan and his three best friends that kind of, they're in each other's lives every single day, and they're folded into each other's mad schemes and day-to-day atrocities, one might say, that they get involved in, with typically disastrous results. And even you mentioned there in the introduction about a conscious indifference to morality or morals. The conscious is very much the key word. Mm. They willfully are transgressive and are constantly questioning. In a way, they end up questioning society's mores and ills, but they're anti-heroes. They're some of the worst people to have walked across sitcom land, and yet you root for them. They're compelling, and weirdly, you end up seeing parts of your own self in them as well.
All right. Well, who knew that one of the great moral questions of our time was how to behave with a dip at a funeral, or indeed at any gathering? What is the correct behaviour? Well, here is some help on that matter from Seinfeld himself, Jerry, and also George, who's played by Jason Alexander. Here's how you should and shouldn't behave with a dip.
What are you doing? What? Did you just double dip that chip?
Excuse me?
You double dipped the chip.
Double dipped? What are you talking about?
You dipped the chip, you took a bite, and you dipped again.
So?
That's like putting your whole mouth right in the dip. Look, from now on, when you take a chip, just take one dip and end it.
Well, I'm sorry, Timmy, but I don't dip that way.
Oh, you don't, huh?
No. You dip the way you want to dip, I'll dip the way I want to dip.
Give me the chip!
Hey!
And Timmy was just a random person at the funeral, perhaps?
Yes.
Somebody associated with the dead, the person who died, I don't know. But at any rate, that's George in his typical amoral stance, totally amoral around his behaviour with the dip and the chip.
Yes, George tends to be the most transgressive figure, one could even argue, in comedy in the 20th century, because he's also, which I love about this, very much based on Larry David, one of the co-creators of Seinfeld, and of course who went on to create Curb Your Enthusiasm. And
it's kind of which this, he plays Larry David.
In which he plays Larry David, a heightened version
of Larry David.
Of Larry David. So Jason Alexander is exceptional in this role as George, and he ends up getting into terrible situations. For example, when he's engaged, he ends up choosing the cheapest envelopes, and then his fiance ends up dying because it's got some kind of toxic thing inside. And you know, they do not shy away from treating terrible things like death, illness, and so on with this lightness of touch that is completely incompatible with empathy and compassion, and completely wonderful.
All right, and I'm always wary about, you know, if you have to explain a joke, it's not a joke. But I'm going to ask you to explain the incongruity theory of humour, and I am really frightened about asking this. because it sounds as if it's a Monty Python invention, but this is a real thing.
It is a real thing, and it's a lot of listeners will instantly think of very maybe more of the weird end of comedy, where in a sense it's a violation of expectation. So there's just as a kind of inherent disruption within, and it relies on a previous relationship with characters, almost like a universe. I mean, Seinfeld even wrote a book called Sign Language, which is about many things, but also some of the terms that they coined themselves, you know, the yada yada, or people will remember no soup for you phrases, Festivus for the rest of us, Serenity Now, you know, mantra. These things kind of have become into the cultural lexicon, and it's about creating a universe that in some ways some might argue does it get lost in translations. It's very wordy, Seinfeld, and a lot of the references, for example, in the finale, so much of the finale was about borrowing from previous things that
But when you talk about, you know, you're talking about characters being familiar with each other, are you not just talking about situation comedy? You know, what is so different about Seinfeld that's just four pals talking about, in inverted commas, nothing?
Well, this is the thing that Jerry even rectified in 2014. He said it wasn't annoying that people thought it was a show about nothing, but he said when he and Larry David in 1988 went into NBC to pitch a show about a comic called Jerry Seinfeld, it was about how comics find their material, and they borrow always from everyday live everyday acquaintances and so on. So he kind of thought, there's a reference made later on to the show being about nothing, and it just took hold. He thinks it's a show about everything, everyday irritation. So the basis of Seinfeld is really about they're in each other's lives. They are loyal, but they're also completely self-serving, self-obsessed. They have no sort of obligation to each other, yet they're kind of a squad. There is a bizarre, twisted love there between them, but also they've created a very specific universe which you couldn't argue, you know, something like, let's say, actually Arrested Development borrows from this really well, even in terms of single-use camera, multi-use camera, that then Arrested Development in later years have really taken on board. But that also borrows from kind of this kind of reverb that gets drenched about motifs that come back, language that comes back. You mentioned
the yada yada sequence.
Yes.
There, well, and this is something that they use as a kind of their, although I don't know, did they invent this or was yada yada a thing anyway?
Well, this is it. There's kind of also a weaving of some kind of cultural and linguistic Jewish references that come in. There's also other references that are woven through Seinfeld's universe. But this kind of, what they do sometimes, borrow from, take these things, borrow right. them, and then fetishize them and make it kind of a thing where George doesn't understand if yada yada means a kind of, you know, covering up for something.
Let's have a listen to the clip. And we have Jerry once here again, Jerry Seinfeld again. Elaine, who we haven't heard from yet, played by Julia Louis-Dreyfus, and George, Jason Alexander again. And this is the, well, one of the yada yada sequences, I guess, in Seinfeld.
Listen to this. Marcy comes over and she tells me that her ex-boyfriend was over late last night, and yada yada yada, I'm really tired today. You don't think she'd yada yada sex?
I've yada yada sex.
Really?
Yeah. I met this lawyer. We went out to dinner. I had the lobster bisque. We went back to my place. Yada yada yada. I never heard from him again.
But you yada yada over the best part.
No, I mentioned the bisque.
There you go. Jason Alexander, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, and it was Jerry Seinfeld as well. The other important character is Cosmo, isn't it?
Cosmo Kramer, who's based on a real neighbour that Jerry Seinfeld really had in New York called Kenny Kramer, who still to this day gives tours around New York of Seinfeld hotspots. So it's kind of this economy that Seinfeld's created as well, like living for people.
What role would you say obsessiveness plays in all of the characters, really?
The truth is, it's the key word there, obsessiveness. They're obsessive about everything. Jerry ends up being, as he calls himself in one episode, Even Steven. He's the foil sometimes, the voice of reason, but he still gets taken in by their obsessive kind of schemes and so on. However, he's very obsessive. He's an obsessive love of breakfast cereal. He's extremely neat. He's a germaphobe. He's obsessed with Superman and the Fortress of Solitude, which makes sense. They're almost these four solitary figures who are in some kind of alternative family situation with each other. They need each other. Sometimes they begrudge each other. And so obsessiveness, Elaine is very impulsive. She constantly uses physical comedy. Abbott and Costello is a huge influence for Seinfeld. And this slapstick kind of pushing each other around. Elaine does that all the time. You get Kramer that always makes an entrance as the neighbor who flings open the door and causes some kind of chaos. He's always bringing chaos into the world. And yet he's kind of this hipster doofus, as they say. And then George, he's chaos personified inside. Obsessive, has to go to Rageaholics at one point. So obsessiveness is definitely
is
the
word. Vitally important. What about the fact that, I don't know how many of the seasons, but there certainly was a parallel running of Seinfeld and Friends. If it was a Leaving Cert certificate question, you'd be asked to compare and contrast, and you'd be doing a lot of contrasting, really, wouldn't you?
You would, but in a kind of, I would say, not in an aesthetic way, in the sense that Seinfeld changed everything for television and created an aesthetic we're quite used to seeing now.
What did it change? When we say it changed everything, that's a lot of things to change.
Yes, so at the time you would have had almost sitcoms being viewed as plays almost in front of a studio audience. So there's this idea of a mini play shot for television each week. Larry David particularly is the one to really thank for this. He redefined it. He wanted initially to use just single camera on the street everywhere and almost have this kind of cinematic quality for each 22-minute episode. He had to compromise a little. There are some multi-use cameras and so on. You see that now, 30 Rock, for example, or Arrested Development, Parks and Recreation. None of them ever go out over the half hour.
And it can be viewed as totally standalone episodes.
Totally standalone episodes. And yet the payoff is always for somebody that's watching it when you get the in-jokes and you've realised you've been pulled back into their universe. But it also changed the way people kind of did deals. I mean, Roseanne was on at this point, Cheers also, but it's extremely different because it doesn't have a studio audience.
I want to finish with a clip, but before we do that, how important is it that there's no sentimentality?
Huge, actually, because it shows you don't need that in order to move people. There isn't a moment of, they say, no hugging, no learning is the big rule on Seinfeld. There's no pathos, there's no growth, and there's no moments of redemption for the characters, but also that makes really compelling satire.
And there's also no facing up to the end of a relationship, as we'll hear in this final clip. Jason Alexander George, his girlfriend is going to break up with him, so he doesn't want to answer the phone. So he's employing a wonderful message on his answering machine to do just that.
Believe it or not, I'm not home.
George, pick up. I know you're screening for Allison.
Hey.
So, coffee shop?
No, I can't. She knows I go there. It's not secure. Hey, I got another call coming in. I gotta let the machine get it. Bye.
Believe it or not, George isn't at home. Please leave a message at the beep. I must be out or I'd pick up the phone. Where could I be? Believe it or not, I'm not home.
George, are you there? I hate that stupid message. I know you're avoiding me. I'm at the office. Please call me. I've got to talk to you.
Hi, Allison. Oh, I guess you're not at home. I probably should have tried you at the office. Anyway, good to hear from you. Really looking forward to the ball.
Jason Alexander is George, not facing up to the truth there. Siobhan Kane was speaking to us about Seinfeld, first screened 30 years ago this week.